The government's being urged to hurry up and use new powers granted under legislation passed last week that would allow migrants to work in jobs outside their visa conditions. The fast-tracked immigration bill allows a 12-month time frame for the minister to impose, vary, or cancel conditions for groups of temporary entry class visa holders, extend expiry dates, and waive any regulatory requirements for certain classes of application. There are about 350,000 temporary visa holders on shore, and the government says more than 200,000 of them have work visas with conditions that might need to be varied. A spokesperson for the Minister of Immigration, Ianese Galloway, says work is underway to enact the new changes, but it's a matter of prioritising what to do first. In the meantime, migrants who have lost their jobs are stuck in the country without the means to support themselves. They can't change jobs and they can't access the benefit. Joining me now to discuss this is Scott Donaldson, a senior associate with AWS Legal based in Queenstown, Anu Colotti, president of the Migrant Workers Association, and Sue Moroney, chief executive of Community Law. Welcome to all of you. Scott, I'll start with you. You're obviously in the thick of it there in Queenstown. Can you give us an idea of what's happening there with people wanting to take up new employment, desperate to, but being hamstrung by their visa restrictions?
Yes. Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for having me on. Yes, there's a whole swathe of people in Queenstown who are really in a very precarious situation because they've got an essential skills work visa. They are required to work for a specific employer. And now they've lost their jobs, so now they're just simply unable to take up a new job. Many of them, all of them want to work as soon as possible, but it's just they're not able to take up a new role with a new employer at this stage, so that they're really in a very difficult situation.
Now, you'll accept it's a huge job. The legislation came in just last week. We were talking about, more than 200,000 of these temporary visa holders may have conditions that need to be varied. So that's massive. Are you confident that the ministry is capable of dealing with this quickly and efficiently, which is what you're asking for?
Well, they haven't dealt with it quickly and efficiently, because if they dealt with it quickly and efficiently, it would have happened by now. It hasn't happened, and it needs to happen as a priority.
What if they're looking at priorities, which is what we're hearing, isn't it? They've got to prioritise things. What should their priorities be?
Well, the reason that they brought in the law was because Immigration New Zealand is simply not capable of managing the number of visa applications and variation of condition applications that they're going to have. And so that was the reason, and that's what's going to happen in Queenstown. There's a whole heap of people that are saying, well, do I need to apply for a new visa or don't I? And that's going to happen. So we're going to see that play out in the next few weeks, especially as the wage subsidy period ends. So priority, I think Queenstown is a special case. I think the vast majority, a good number of the people who have lost their jobs are migrants. And businesses need to be able to employ those people.
You had concerns about how Immigration New Zealand was working even before COVID, didn't you?
Well, look, I mean, I think it's pretty well understood that Immigration New Zealand have not been completing at least resident applications in a timely way. They did actually make some improvements, so I have to say that. Towards the start of this year, where they were processing work visa applications quite quickly, and that's necessary. Last year, there were some real major issues that meant that people weren't getting their visas through in a timely way, and oftentimes they were waiting in the order of 2-3 months before they could actually start work, and you know, that was really detrimental to businesses. They have improved, but they need to improve a lot more.
Listeners may be wondering, because we're hearing so much, aren't we, about unemployment levels, and that they will go higher, we know this, and wondering why there is this rush for migrants to have their work visas changed if there may not be the jobs for them to work in. Because, as you say, hospitality is a huge employer. That's what we're looking at in Queenstown. The future is uncertain.
Yeah, look, I mean, Queenstown is a special case. But before this situation, we did have essentially more jobs than we had people who were willing to fill those jobs. So, you know, although Queenstown is a tourist-orientated place, there is a great deal of economic activity that isn't tourism. So in the construction sector, retail sector, those people need In a lot of cases, people in those areas need workers. And the only people who are able to fill those jobs, in many cases, are migrants. So there needs to be an easy pathway for those jobs to be filled by migrants. If there's too much emphasis put on Kiwis first sort of policy, that ultimately is going to be bad for those businesses, and that ultimately is going to be bad for all of us.
So businesses, I think you argue, are stuck in the middle here.
Absolutely. I mean, look, if you're a business, you need to hire a worker, need to hire a team, need to hire workers. You need to have as few barriers put in front of you as possible, because that's what prevents you from doing your work. The more restrictions that are placed on migrants, the more difficult it is for businesses to start doing the work they need. And, I accept the fact that there does have to be some restrictions placed on businesses before they hire migrants to make sure that there are no New Zealanders available. But, you know, oftentimes those sort of processes that need to be go through to find New Zealanders that just aren't there in the first place can be really detrimental to those businesses. It's just requires too much administration, and it is a whole bunch of costs. So, you know, before this COVID situation, we had many businesses who are saying, "Look, I just can't deal. I cannot deal with dealing with Immigration New Zealand all the time. I have to constantly go through these long, involved processes to try and find New Zealanders, and those New Zealanders just simply aren't there." And that's just what it's like in Queenstown. And, you know, even though there are obviously a lot of people who have lost their jobs, a lot of businesses will still be in that situation where they're constantly having to go through these quite cumbersome processes before they can hire the migrants. And the migrants are there, they want to work. In many cases, there's not New Zealanders available. So, you know, they need to be able to hire those. The businesses need to be able to hire those workers as soon as they can.
Can you give us some examples of migrants who may have been employed in one area who want to be employed in another area but at this stage cannot?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a really common scenario. Often it's people who have a particular role at a company, and the company's downsized, and that requires, they've sort of restructured their whole staff, and often people are sort of doing hybrid roles, but that puts them in breach of their employment conditions, because you have to work in a specific role with a specific business. And then often it's just people who have lost their jobs. Yesterday I was speaking with a paraglider pilot who's lost his job as a paragliding pilot, wants to take up a job as a driver, and there's a whole bunch of new jobs as drivers, but simply is unable to because of visa restrictions, can't apply for could apply as of this week for a new work visa, but it'll be, who knows how long it will take before he can start work. So there's a person there willing to give him a job, there's a migrant that's ready to work, And there's unlikely to be any New Zealanders that are going to be able to fill that job. So that job just can't happen.
Here's the irony, of course, which, you know, you're addressing. The legislation was passed through at speed, fast-tracked, and yet now it's not happening quickly enough. Realistically, say it's been a week, realistically, how quickly do you want to see, or is there the political will to see these changes come in? So at least some of the applications can be processed more quickly, and the migrants who are applying, I guess the main thing perhaps for them in a way, is that time frame you were talking about, knowing how long they have to wait.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, look, I mean, to me, the work should have started 2 months ago, but I thought what you touched on there, Lynn, is that there is a political sort of element to it. I think the government doesn't want to be seen to be too lenient towards migrants, because I think there's going to be a sort of a political discussion around Kiwis first versus migrant rights. It's likely to happen, and I think that the government's going to be very careful about the way they roll this out, and that's why they're taking so long.
Do you have no sympathy for the Kiwis first argument? when times are this tough?
Most definitely. I mean, look, everybody accepts that Kiwis First is everybody expects Kiwis First. But look, I'm looking from a Queenstown perspective. And Queenstown, we just don't, I mean, tourism businesses in particular have tried really hard to try and get as many New Zealanders into tourism as they possibly can, get as many new tourism Kiwi workers down to Queenstown. There's been efforts from the Chamber of Commerce to try and bring people down from Auckland and Wellington and Christchurch. But, you know, the people who are willing to come and willing to do those big hours for often not a lot of money are generally migrants. So, look, that's just what I'm seeing from a Queenstown perspective. I accept that there's probably different dynamics in different parts of the country.
This is wider, I think we should point out, than backpackers and migrant workers who just want to come here for, you know, a year or two, work, have a great time and then head home. We're also talking about people who ultimately, potentially, would like to stay and work in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can distinguish people, migrants from between people who are from developing countries and people from developed countries. So in your developed countries, you've got people from the UK, Ireland, Australia, perhaps, whereas developing countries in Queenstown, you've got a lot of Brazilians, Filipinos, Indians, and most of those people are, they are the ones who are trying to make their life in Queenstown. There's a great deal of variety in migrants, so I don't want to stereotype anybody too much, but so most of those people from developing countries are here. They want to try and make a life. They work very, very, very hard. Many of them do really big hours for not a lot of money, so 55, 60 hours per week. I heard some comments about going down to a four-day week earlier on. I don't think that's really on the cards for a lot of these people. They've really been upended by this situation. They've had the carpet pulled out from underneath them. I think Queenstown in particular has really relied on those people for the last 10 years, 10 years and more. It's what the prosperity of Queenstown has largely been on the back of, and we need to try and keep those people on that pathway towards becoming New Zealanders. They're the sort of people we want in the country, hardworking, and willing to make sacrifices for their families and for their communities.
Stay with us, Scott. I'm going to bring into the conversation Anu Kaloti, President of the Migrant Workers Association. Hi, Anu, you'll have been listening to that. What kinds of things are you hearing from migrants? How dire is their situation at the moment?
Morena Len and Morena Scott. So we've had unprecedented contact from migrant workers who have been adversely affected through this pandemic and lockdown. So just to quickly give you examples of the sort of stories we have been getting and continue to get, people who would have been who have been fired on the spot just as lockdown started, people who still have jobs, their employer has claimed the wage subsidy but not passed on to the migrant worker, and then people who have been forced to use unpaid leave, annual leave, when they should really have been paid properly through wage subsidy or otherwise. And then we also have a large number of people in thousands, no one knows the exact number, but I think it's in thousands, people who have valid work visas to work in New Zealand, but they are stuck overseas. A lot of these people are not just on a working holiday visa or an essential skills visa. A lot of these people are on a genuine pathway to residence, and they are very, very close to achieving their goal of being here permanently. And we've had people contact us wanting to use our shelter to sleep in for a night or two. You know, I'd like to point out that we don't actually have a shelter, we just have our office. A whole range of people in terms of difficulties where, you know, people still have a job but don't have an income, and all the way to the other end of the spectrum where people are jobless and homeless. And as you've already said, and Scott has said as well, you know, these people don't have access to social welfare here, They can't go back home because of the border closure here and in their home countries as well in many cases. So these people are trapped without any support.
As a matter of interest, when they talk to you, Anu, about the wage subsidy illegally not being passed on, do you encourage them to make a complaint? Because they, perhaps like so, I mean, like so many employees now, are feeling very vulnerable in this time of low employment and worse to come. So is it in their interests to dob in employers who wrongfully don't pass on the wage subsidy or who wrongfully make them take leave or unpaid leave?
Yes, we absolutely do encourage them, and we do a lot of education. Well, we've had to upskill ourselves first as we were at the same time making our migrant workers aware. So we've been providing a lot of education and awareness around this, and some of our workers have been bold enough and strong enough to go and challenge their employers, and they have been successful in getting their minimum entitlements. But the large majority still suffers in silence. I mean, these are the most vulnerable workers in our workforce in New Zealand who are generally exploited. A lot of them are exploited anyway. We've seen many, many stories over the years in media. So they are very, very scared to speak out and challenge their employers. So most of them still don't. They suffer in silence.
The government made $30 million available through civil defence emergency management groups to help those who needed it. Has any of that money made its way to this migrant group?
Right. So, that has been mentioned time and time again. And I know not just us, but many other associations and trade unions have been calling for the Section 64 of the Social Security Act to be enacted so that our temporary migrants can be given benefits just for a temporary time period while we go through this phase. Every time that request is put forward, we are told about the $30 million through the civil defence management. And the anecdotal information that we are getting from migrants who are affected is that people are getting free food packs after queuing for a long time and on a daily basis. And this is all through, even through level four, level three, when people should be maintaining physical distance. You know, it puts people at risk if they have to physically go out and queue up for free food packs. So that's what the help has been mostly, free food packs. And also in some cases where people have been evicted from their rented accommodation and have actually become homeless, then they can seek emergency accommodation through the civil defence means. So we believe, we feel that this is not the most appropriate way of helping migrants. We've been told over the years, time and time again, migrant workers have same rights as Kiwi workers. So while our Kiwi workers, who are New Zealand citizens or residents, have access to social welfare, all we ask for is a little bit of compassion and that temporary migrant workers are allowed the same social welfare, not permanently, indefinitely, just for a small time period while we get things together again, while our migrant workers are able to find work again. And also, we feel that it's quite humiliating. From a cultural perspective, it's quite, people feel ashamed and embarrassed to have to ask for handouts in the form of free food packs. So we feel it's not appropriate to provide help in that form.
And I've got to say that a lot of the feedback coming in is not sympathetic to the migrants. The argument is that businesses want migrants because they'll accept lower wages and below standards work conditions, and that they're driving down wages, and employers need to pay fair wages to New Zealanders to keep New Zealanders employed. That whole New Zealanders first argument I discussed with Scott. And these are very heartfelt pleas from that point of view. You know, why have a migrant driver in Queenstown? Surely there are people who need to put food on the table in Queenstown who would happily take that job. So you also have this argument from people. We're a nation under stress at the moment.
Lynn, can I make a point on that?
I'll let Arno first and then bring you in, Scott.
So, yes, absolutely correct that when migrants are exploited and underpaid, overworked, that drives wages and working conditions for all of us, not just migrant workers. We know that, and also I refer you to a research project that was commissioned by our present government, and I think it was last year in July, Dr. Christina Stringer and Professor Francis Collins published their report, and one of the findings was that migrant workers are exploited when their visas are attached to their employer. So we believe that now is the opportunity for this government to do the right thing and actually not only just help the employers and the migrant workers and the Kiwi workers, but also get rid of or at least minimize exploitation. I think the right thing to do now would be to use this, the new legislation that was passed last week, and perhaps open the remaining duration of essential skills visas. So that way, that kind of allows workers to go and work wherever they can find work, and it allows employers access to those workers, and it would also minimize exploitation. So that would be a win-win situation for everybody. And I would like to bring in another viewpoint here. You know, we're in this together. Just over a year ago, 15th of March, Christchurch terror attack on the mosques, we saw so much compassion, and it was, you know, we are them, they are us, we are all one. And we are in that situation again. We are all together in this. It's, I think, quite harsh to kind of divide up the workforce into migrants and Kiwis, whereas, you know, as humans, we all have the same basic needs that have to be met. So I just want to touch on Kiwis who live in Australia but don't have access to social welfare. How is it okay for our Prime Minister to make a plea to the Australian Prime Minister to consider Kiwis be given help there through the social welfare system and not consider the migrant workers here in New Zealand? You know, I see the two as the same situation.
Scott, you wanted to...
Yeah, look, I just wanted to make the point that the vast majority of migrants are not exploited, and the vast majority of employers are meeting the obligations under the wage subsidy rules. I'm aware of a number of employers in Queenstown who are making really, really big sacrifices to try and keep their migrant workers on staff. Often they're doing that because they see the migrant workers as part of their wider family, and they're doing that because they want to try and keep it together, and they're worried about their migrant workers. Yeah, I think to suggest, you know, obviously I'm very sympathetic to those people who've got the short shrift, but yeah, I think a lot of employers deserve a lot of credit for the way that they're treating migrant workers. I think if you don't mind, I'd just like to make a point about the social welfare as well. I think what we're going to see between now and sometime in late September is this debate between Kiwis First and migrant rights continuing. Most migrants come to New Zealand without the expectation that they're going to access social welfare from when they first arrive. That's part of the deal. And I don't believe there's an expectation on the part of migrants to get social welfare. I think also giving social welfare to migrants is not going to play well into the Kiwis First versus migrant rights argument. I think that's going to ultimately cause people to come to the view that migrants should leave, and I think that's going to be bad for migrants, it's going to be bad for business, it's going to be bad for Kiwis.
Sue Moroney, let me bring you in here, because I think the community law has been trying to help migrants in this situation. What's your assessment of where things are now?
Well, good morning, Lynn. Look, first of all, I think there's a broader issue that both Scott and Anu have alluded to. There has been a problem with how the wage subsidy has been applied by employers, and I think that's the crux of the issue. It's really disappointing to see that employers who have lobbied successive governments about having access to a migrant workforce and assuring the governments that they would look after them and take care of them and treat them well, that in fact far too many workers have been denied access to the wage subsidy because their employers have actually either made them redundant or sacked them instead of giving them access to the wage subsidy. And that could fix a large amount of the problem that exists at the moment. Now, that has an impact on all workers, but it has a particular impact on migrant workers because if they lose their jobs, they don't have any income. They have zero. And that leaves them ripe for exploitation into the future as well. So if people have got concerns about migrant workers being exploited in the past, then right now they are even more vulnerable than what they have ever been. And the government has a mechanism that it could have triggered and has failed to do so far, and that's Section 64 of the Social Security Act that Anu spoke about. Now, that provision is there specifically for this event. It is only, that section can only be triggered when there is an epidemic management notice in force, which is exactly what we've got now, and it's inexplicable about why the government has failed to trigger that provision so far. It's a temporary provision that would allow people in this situation to have access to just $164 a week, but that would make a difference in the current situation.
Well, that echoes the concerns that the government also isn't moving quickly enough. This is how we started this conversation, with these changes to immigration law that were fast-tracked. Are you also concerned about that?
Well, I think that that's an added reason why Section 64 needs to be invoked as soon as possible, because if it's not, people are trapped here. They, you know, they've been earning in New Zealand and they have paid their taxes just like anyone else. And then it comes to this epidemic situation, and they have often, unfortunately, being left in a situation with no income. So from community law's perspective, the urgent thing is to get some income to them, some income support to them now, using Section 64, or actually ensuring that that the employers who let them go, possibly illegally in the first place, take them back on and get the wage subsidy for those people, because that would actually be the very best support they could get. That's up to $585 a week. That's obviously vastly superior to $164 a week. So, you know, we do face a growing humanitarian crisis if we can't get this sorted. We don't know how many thousands of workers are in this situation, but it leaves everyone in an unsafe situation if you've got people who are desperate, and as the weeks go on, they get more and more desperate. We know that that's not a great outcome for anyone in society.
Foreign Minister Winston Peters suggested to migrants that they should probably go home. And there's, you know, been a lot of talk about that, but has that been taken up by many? Is that an option for many? And well, have there been repercussions from that statement?
Well, at the moment, they can't. And so it's a very odd statement to be making. Once the borders open and the situation changes and the epidemic management notice is lifted, then that is a time when those considerations can be made. But the government, in its official advice, was told that it was logistically not possible for tens of thousands of workers to go home over this period, and that they would have to shelter in place. So they have to shelter in place. That means staying here. And so telling them to go home at the moment just isn't viable, and the government knows that. They've had that advice. What is interesting in the government official advice is that anywhere that there's been a discussion about the section that they could have triggered under the Social Services Act, Social Security Act, all of that information, all of that advice has been redacted. So we have nothing on the public record that tells us what advice the government got from its own officials about triggering that provision. And that seems very odd because many of the other issues are out there in the open, but this issue has been kept from the public.
We will, I'm sure, return to this. But thank you for your time this morning. I've been talking to Sue Moroney, Anu Kaloti and Scott Donaldson.